Hello again. This is Carol Bond returning with the second half hour of the reading of the Decatur Herald and Review, October 25th, 2016. We'll begin this portion of our program with the reading of the obituaries. Edward Cahan, 95, of Little Rock, Arkansas, entered heaven Friday, October 21st, 2016, at St. Vincent's Hospital in Little Rock, with his family by his side. A celebration of Eddie's life will be held at St. Andrew's Anglican Church, 8300 Canis Road, Little Rock, on Saturday, October 29th at 11 a.m. The family requests memorials be made to Central Christian Church, 650 West William Street, Decatur. Rachel M. Detling, 19, of Mattoon, formerly of Hammond, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, October 22nd. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, October 28th, at the Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, Atwood. Visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Hammond Cemetery, Hammond, Illinois. We turn again to other news. Here's a small article with this headline, Enjoy Lincoln Log Cabin by Torchlight. Halloween hike event set Friday at State Historic Site. This is the Lee News Service who provides this article, and the dateline is Lerna. A torchlit tour, a jack-o'-lantern contest, and other activities are set to take place at Lincoln Log Cabin State Historic Site on Friday. The site's Halloween hike event is scheduled for 6 to 9 p.m. and will feature storytellers offering spooky tales along torchlit paths. Visitors are encouraged to wear Halloween costumes to the event, which will also feature judging of hand-carved jack-o'-lanterns visitors bring to the site. At the Sargent Farm area of the site, the theme will be related to the Robert Burns' poem, Halloween, according to a news release. Abraham Lincoln, whose father and stepmother lived at the site's location, was a fan of Burns's poetry. The activities will also include music and a hot dog roast near the site's visitors' center. Proceeds from hot dog and s'more sales will go to the site's educational and historic interpretation programs. Lincoln Log Cabin State Historic Site is located in southern Coles County, and more information is available by calling to the site, 217-345-1845. Well, on page 9, there is one more local Cub story. The headline is Anticipation Building for Cubs Fans. This was written by Chris Lusvardi, and the dateline is Mount Zion. Russ Isom has been hoping to spread the excitement he feels about the Chicago Cubs to anyone passing by the Glenwood Assisted Living Facility in Mount Zion. Now that the Cubs are going to play in the World Series for the first time in 71 years, it's hard for many of those who see him not to share in what Isom is feeling. Since the playoffs started a few weeks ago, he has been sitting outside on the sidewalk a couple times each day, wearing a Cubs jersey and hat while holding Cubs flags and a pennant on sticks, along with an American flag. Isom has added a newspaper poster of Cubs manager Joe Madden to go along with a parking reserved for Cubs fans sign as he enjoys time outside in the fresh fall air. Isom 91 is mindful plenty of others haven't been in the position he is in to enjoy the moment, given more than a century of the Cubs coming up short. He's hoping the excitement continues to build over the coming week. Quote, I'm thankful to have lived this long to see them doing what they're doing, Isom said. They've come this far. I hope they get them rings. Isom has caught the attention of drivers traveling on a busy stretch of Baltimore Avenue. Some, including St. Louis Cardinals fan Matt Current, have stopped to wish the Cubs well. Others are honking to their car horns in support of having their picture taken with Isom or and sharing it on social media. Although he was 20 years old at the time, Isom doesn't remember much about the last time the Cubs went to the World Series. Games weren't televised back then, and he was serving in the military with World War II ending and didn't return home until 1946. Watching baseball is something he came to really find a passion for later in life, particularly after retiring. Quote, since retiring, I've watched every game I could, Isom said. Now I'll be watching them every chance I get. Isom didn't attend his first game at Wrigley Field until he was more than 50 years old. Quote, we had no money back then, Isom said. It was worth the wait. We had a beer and hot dog. That always tastes good at the ballpark. After waiting for so long, the Cubs being in the World Series is a dream come true for Isom and plenty of others. The Reverend Wayne Dunning preached Sunday at Faith Fellowship Christian Church wearing a Cubs jersey. Quote, it was well received, Dunning said. We've got a great mixture of Cardinal fans in there. It was sort of like the lovable losers, you know. They said you guys deserve at least one. Dunning said, talking about baseball fitting with the message he wanted to share. Quote, some of us need a miracle in our life. And Cubs fans, we definitely need a miracle, Dunning said. We tied it in with how some people have to wait for their miracles, and Cubs fans have waited patiently. Some people they don't want to have to wait a week, a month, a year, and some people wait 108 years. As someone who grew up a Cubs fan, Dunning thinks this year's team can put all the suffering of years past behind them. Quote, we're not predicting anything. We're just going to take one game at a time, and we're going to get rid of the curse of the goat and all these other curses, Dunning said. All that's going to be forgotten. We've just got to win the series. This year's accomplishment will hold extra meaning for Decatur resident Amy Blankenship, 41, who remembers watching Cubs games with her dad and brothers. My dad has passed on to be with the Lord, she said. He died October 25th, 2001. I bet he's up there rooting. I think that was meant to happen. Other area residents share similar feelings about having loved ones not be able to share in the same experience they will be in the next week. Quote, Dad passed away at age 87 this February, never getting the chance to see the Cubs win the World Series, said Jay Hartman, 60, who remembers attending Cubs games and listening to others on the radio with his dad. Quote, at his funeral service, the priest, who is also a fan of the Cubs, mentioned to everyone what a huge Cubs fan my dad was. The priest went on to say, quote, "Hopefully sending this Cub fan up to you, Lord, will be the one that puts us over the top this year." Quote, "I'm convinced he is right," Hartman said. Interest in the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry is apparent in discussions about this year's World Series, even though the two teams aren't playing each other. Judy Dubuc remembers growing up with a family of 10 people divided among their allegiances until her parents were buried. Dubuc said her mother would now be dancing. Quote, "My mother was buried with her Cub hat on, literally in her coffin with her Cub hat. And my father was buried with his Cardinal hat," Dubuc said. "He was one of those Cardinal fans that would root for the Cubs if they weren't playing the Cardinals. She's up there with Ernie Banks and Ron Santo and Billy Williams and everybody else dancing. And my dad's happy too." Tracy Black was beginning to share in the doubt of many Cubs fans until this year's team started on its way to winning 103 regular season games. Quote, "I love this year's team, and I pray they win it all," Black said. "I was starting to think me nor my son would ever see them win. I turn 60 Wednesday. If they win, I'm going to wrap the headline in plastic and put it on my father's grave and hope that he sees it." Isom is looking forward to watching the series in front of his 41-inch television, like he has throughout the playoffs and during Saturday's clinching Game 6 against the Los Angeles Dodgers. Quote, "I was hollering," Isom said. "I don't know if I disturbed my neighbor, but she's a Cardinals fan." Isom said the increasing excitement is showing the dedication of Cubs fans. Quote, "Win or lose, those fans have been in the stands rooting for them," Isom said. "They've just been such dedicated fans." And along with this article, there is a picture of Alina Muniz, who's cleaning off the gravestone of her great-grandparents, Norman and Florence Sanders, as a Cubs W flag marks the location of the couple's gravesite at St. Luke's Cemetery in Chicago. There's also a photograph of Mr. Isom, who is sitting in his motorized wheelchair on the curb, decked out in his Cubs shirt and waving all kinds of flags. He lives at Glenwood Assisted Living Facility. And he's now going to plan his next week around the World Series schedule, hoping for 4 more wins. Let's see what Abby's writers are asking her today. "Dear Abby, I'm a 20-year-old college student and have had a job at the same retail store for 2 years. A few weeks ago, a mother walked in holding a baby that appeared to be about 6 months old. The first thing I noticed was that he had numerous bruises. There were pronounced bruises under both eyes, another large one on his temple, and several more visible on his arms and legs. I have heard horror stories about parents whose infants have a medical condition that causes them to bruise easily, but the parents are accused of child abuse. This mother seemed attentive to her baby, and I saw nothing in her behavior to make me think her child was in any danger. I didn't say anything, but I keep wondering if I should have called the police or informed my manager. I've been telling myself that there may have been an innocent explanation for the child's injuries, but I don't know if I screwed up. I didn't want to meddle, and now I'm worried the baby might be suffering because I didn't speak up. Any advice on what I should have done or should do in the future would be appreciated. Signed, Second Thoughts in Kansas. Dear Second Thoughts, because you were unsure about what to do, you should have written down the woman's license number, if possible, and alerted the store manager so the matter could be handled according to store policy. However, if no policy is in place, you could have contacted childhelp.org for guidance. It offers prevention, intervention, and treatment programs and has helped more than 10 million children at risk or in trouble. Childhelp.org has a national toll-free hotline, 1-800-422-4453. Next letter. Dear Abby, what is the protocol for divorced parents paying for the rehearsal dinner for their son who is getting married? My ex-wife expects me to pay for a significantly bigger portion of the expenses, yet at the time of our divorce, she insisted on splitting the assets 50-50. My opinion is that because we are equal in the parenting, we should divide the expenses 50-50. I'm willing to concede to her some credit if she does a significant amount of work and planning over and above my own, but this should be negotiated ahead of time. We are both employed and have good incomes. We are both remarried and our spouses work. What's your take on this, Abby? Signed, Right Down the Middle. Dear Down the Middle, the parents of the groom traditionally bear the cost of the rehearsal dinner. Because you and your son's mother are divorced, she should pay for half, unless there is such a disparity in your incomes that it would cause her financial stress. If your ex needs credit, then by all means discuss it with her. This is a time to put aside old grievances and celebrate, if only for the sake of your son. And here's another letter. Dear Abby, what do you think of the idea that when you have a decision to make and it's between your head and your heart, to choose your head? We are currently trying to find a place to live after my husband retires, and we are having a difficult time trying to decide on a house. It's tough to say no to a place that your heart loves. Signed, Indecisive in New York. Dear Indecisive, I'm sure it is. However, investing in a house is different from adopting a puppy. When making a decision that will have financial consequences, such as buying a house, you will have fewer regrets if you think with your head. Mary Hunt, our everyday cheapskate, has another article about cleaning. Some more suggestions. This is the headline. Florida's mold and mildew no match for cleaning solution. And here's the first letter. Dear Mary, I can't thank you enough for telling us about your magic shower and tub cleaner. I live in an older home in moldy old Florida, and I have a tile shower. I used to bleach it every 10 to 14 days, and by the 14th day, it would be pretty bad. I'm talking mold and mildew. Since using your magic formula, I only bleached once this whole summer. I squirt the shower down 2 to 3 times a week, and it's so easy and well worth it. Signed, Mike. Dear Mike, the stuff really is like magic, isn't it? I know so many readers are chomping at the bit to know more about the secret concoction that saved your life. It saved mine too, but so I know how you feel. I call it my magic tub and tile soap and scum remover. Maybe we need to add mold and mildew to that label as well. I suggest readers read the original column called How to Make Ugly Soap, Scum, Mildew, and Water Marks Disappear Like Magic for details. But for those who can't wait, here's a quick refresh. Pour 1 cup Blue Dawn dishwashing liquid into a 32-ounce spray bottle. Add enough white vinegar to fill the bottle to within an inch of the top. Done. Shake the bottle and then spray away. Spray the walls, floors, fixtures, glass doors, shampoo, caddy, and every surface inside the tub or shower. If the soap, scum, mold, and mildew are, shall we say, well developed, leave the remover on overnight. In the morning, gently scrub with a sponge, Scotch-Brite, or brush. You'll be smiling when you realize the gunk is now soft and easy to rinse down the drain. Tough spots might require a good stiff brush the first time. Once the area is clean, spray it down once a week or so. You won't even have to scrub from then on. Just spray, wait a few minutes, and rinse. Let it dry, and behold, no water spots. The next headline is this. It's about cleaning clothing, and here's the letter from Katie. Dear Mary, we are trying to frugalize every detail of our lives so we can live on one income. How do you recommend cleaning dry, clean only clothing items like men's suits and blazers? And here's her reply. Dear Katie, your question made me stop and think about the last time I dry cleaned. It's been so long, I can't remember. But that doesn't mean I don't share your high standard when it comes to looking professional with clean and pressed clothes. While many clothing items marked dry clean only can be hand washed successfully, men's suits and blazers are not among them. However, if you exercise good care, these items can be professionally cleaned far less frequently than you might think. Some fabrics, like wool and cashmere, must be dry cleaned, but it is not good for them to be dry cleaned often. Instead, every month or two, you should hang those items, especially suits, sport coats, and blazers, outdoors for several hours out of direct sunlight. That will refresh and renew those natural fibers. If you practice good personal hygiene and are careful to deal with stains right away, dry cleaning these items once a year should be sufficient. I still enjoy that just pressed look for everything from my husband's shirts and slacks to my clothes to linens. My Rowenta DG8520 Perfect Steam is dry cleaner quality and does an amazing job. It paid for itself in short order because, as I said, I cannot remember the last time I paid a dry cleaner. I press my husband's suits and blazers with it, but I am very careful, using a pressing cloth and setting the machine to the proper temperature. We turn now to the Decatur Tribune online and take a look at Paul Osborne's City Beat column to find out what he's interested in today. His headline is Milliken's Position on National Anthem Protest Angers Alumni and Others. Our own Millikan University stepped in a big pile of controversy in how it has handled some of its football players who took a knee when the national anthem was being played. I didn't hear or know anything about it until I received a letter to the editor from Cheryl Gatto of Naperville, a Millikan alum who was at the Millikan North Central game last month and wrote to express her anger at some of the Millikan players disrespecting the national anthem. Her letter was printed in the September 28th edition of this newspaper, and our sports editor, J. Thomas McNamara, followed up by contacting Millikan University. Now, at least as this is being written, the policy is that the Millikan team will stay in their locker room until after the national anthem is played, apparently an option agreed to by the players. Here's an update. Tuesday evening, Millikan University issued the following statement about its position. Quote, "The national anthem is an opportunity to reflect on the liberty and freedom we hold sacred and work to foster. Millikan University will continue to celebrate that tradition at every one of our games. True to our mission to prepare students for democratic citizenship in a global environment, we respect the rights and beliefs of our students, faculty, and community to exercise their civil liberties in ways consistent with their conscience while the national anthem is played. With that in mind, when the Big Blue take the field this weekend, we will continue to support the individual expressions of those liberties and freedoms." End of quote. Millikan's initial position angered a lot of people, many who are Millikan alums, who have called or emailed about it from far and near, and Facebook exploded with comments over the weekend, especially when a photo showing one Millikan player standing on the sidelines alone when the anthem was played. McNamara has some more information about the handling of the football national anthem protest in his Irish Stew on page 12 of this week's print edition of the Decatur Tribune. "I believe this situation and how it has been handled has been mostly negative for the university, not only in Decatur, but across many states where people have read about it. I agree with Cheryl Gatto's letter that we printed on September 28th, especially her final two paragraphs." She wrote, quote, "When you wear the uniform of this team, you will stand during the playing of the national anthem. The anthem is a prayer. If you choose to exercise your right to protest, that's fine. Do it after the game and not while you wear the uniform of this team. If you insist to take a knee, you may do so on your own time, not on team time. Feel free to demonstrate on the sidewalk or parking lot outside this stadium. Period." Continuing to quote, "Maybe if more coaches stood up to the administrations of schools and colleges who allow this insanity, by the time these players get to college sports or the big leagues, they might have learned about honor, strength of character, and the sacrifice so many have given for their right to protest." End of quote. I couldn't have written it any better, says Paul Osborne. This has been Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald Review, dated October 25th, 2016, and also the Decatur Tribune. I look forward very much to reading with you again next week.